It's time now for Setting the Record Straight on KOHI with Melinda Bernard. You can call the show now at 503-397-1600 or toll free at 877-397-1632. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KOHI, staff, management, or sponsors. Now, here's Melinda.
Good morning, everyone. Happy Friday. Welcome to Setting the Record Straight. Carol and I have another action-packed show for you this morning, so grab a cup of coffee and sit down and join us because we are chatting about, well, Measure 113. And you're going to be thinking, well, Measure 113, didn't we vote on that? Hasn't that settled? That was the measure. That 68% of Oregonians said, you know what, if you are an elected member of the House or the Senate, you need to do your job. If you have more than 10 unexcused absences in a session, you will not be eligible to run the next cycle. And so it's been kind of a done deal. Even the Department of Justice weighed in on it. I don't know, Carol, if you read that. But they said yes, that the wording is very clear. The intent of what the voters wanted is very clear. Well, if anybody's been paying attention, last session, there were quite a few, Republican senators who decided that, well, you know what? The law isn't going to pertain to me because the law is flawed. So joining us this morning is former State Senator Rachel Armitage, and the Columbia County Democrats chair, Anthony Cirasi. And Anthony was also a candidate for House District 31, which is here in Columbia County. And if those of you who don't have the bingo card, Rachel, as you will remember, was chosen and to replace Betsy Johnson. And so she served as our senator before the most recent election. And I just want to thank you both for joining us this morning. Welcome.
Thank you for having us. Always great to talk to you again.
Good to be here.
So, a lot of chat, because now, Oregon Secretary of State, she's, our newly appointed Secretary of State, LaVon Griffin Velade, announced this week that she intends to enforce Measure 13, 113. And, Republican legislators are raising disputes, basically. They're claiming that the enforceability and the meaning of the measure is unclear, and they're pledging to fight in court. So, Anthony, I'd like to go to you first. Columbia County has had a really interesting situation here where we really didn't have 100% representation from our House Republican this time around. And also our state senator, Suzanne Weber, chose not to come to work on many, many occasions. So where do you think that this puts us?
It's a really unfortunate situation for Columbia County and the rest of our district. We've got, like you said, we've got both representatives, both of our state legislators have been doing sort of half duty at best. There's nobody, no other district in the state has the same sort of, legislative impairment. We've got a state representative that won't do, can't be on any committees. And we've got a state senator that isn't showing up on the floor. It's, as far as I'm aware, it's unprecedented. It's really unfair to every resident of this district.
Thank you. Thank you for that insight. And I just wanted to clarify for anybody who hasn't been listening to our show or reading the newspaper that we're talking about House Representative Brian Stout. Brian was pulled from his committees very early on by Speaker Dan Rayfield once allegations were levied at him. And those were, there was an allegation alleged and, recently confirmed in court. Well, she had, a former campaign worker had filed a sexual abuse protective order and had been given that order claiming that Mr. Stout had been stalking her and And among those claims, she alleged that he had sexually assaulted her, and he fought that order. And thus, when that became public, the speaker removed him from his committees. He did sit in committee, but he was not allowed to vote. And coupled with that, with Senator Weber not showing up on the floor, Columbia County basically was left without representation, at least in my opinion. And so, Rachel, you served. It was a short session, but you did the work, and you served not just the session, but for the whole term, which was a year. What are your thoughts about a senator not showing up? I will say that Senator Weber claims that she was working. She just wasn't showing up for the vote. So what are your thoughts on that, Rachel?
You know, I really feel that this is a super nuanced issue. I think, you know, here in Senate District 16, we have a wide variety of opinion on just about every political issue. I think literally everything I say on this particular show, regardless of which side it might be on, is going to be disagreed with about 50% of the people listening, I'm betting. But I think the most important thing is that this is a really nuanced issue. I tend to believe that everybody has a right to use the tools in their toolbox. So ethically speaking, I think Republicans are allowed to walk out. They're allowed to do that. It's something we've allowed constitutionally. It's something we've allowed according to the rules of the House and the Senate. And their constituents, by and large, have reelected them for years. I remember back in 2016 when Republicans, that was my first memory of this happening. I was staffing in the legislature, and Republicans started making us read bills in their entirety on the floor. So you'd have like 100-page bills that our staffers were trying to read out loud, and it shortened it extended the length of the time that we had to be on the floor, and it basically wound down the clock, essentially, if you can think of like a football game where you're winding down the clock so the other team can't move. That's basically what was happening. And Republicans have been doing things like that ever since. They've walked out on a number of issues. And their constituents, by and large, have said, okay, great, fine, thank you. And that's the tool they have in their toolbox. That's what they do. I think Democrats are allowed to use their tools in their toolbox too, and the majority has a lot of tools at their disposal that they should be using. One of them is to pass a ballot measure saying Republicans can't do this anymore and that they've abused the privilege. And they're allowed to do that. They did that, and here we are. I think it's all fair.
Okay. So I would love to hear from you if you think that it's possible to do a thorough job as a representative, whether you're a senator or you're a House representative, if you are gone half a day while you're in session. Because for those who weren't watching, what they do is if they convene at, let's say, 10 in the morning or 10:30, everyone comes to the floor, and if there's a roll call and you haven't been excused, now we're talking if you had a doctor's appointment, mm-hmm. if there's death in the family, if you're ill, there were two Republicans, one Democrat and one Republican this last session who were excused because they had serious health issues. So they get there, and when they don't have a quorum because Republicans haven't shown up, then they send out the sergeant at arms, I believe that's what they call them, to look for them. And when they can't find them, then that's it. You know, they go through their procedural things, and basically they end the session that day and they're gone. So I think what was happening is some of them didn't show up at all, but, Senator Weber claims that she would come in the afternoon and that she was there. So do you think that whether you're a Democrat or Republican, that you're adequately helping your constituents if you're just there half the day?
Yeah, so like any good politician, I'm going to go ahead and speak out of both sides of my mouth here. And I'm going to say that, again, ethically, and if the rules are the rules, you can do what you want within the rules, right? I think anybody can. If you don't like what the minority party is doing, you should change what they're allowed to do and use your ability to do that. Now, that being said, Do I think it's good policy making? No. I think it's terrible policy making. And do I think Republicans should support?
You know, language can be a fickle beast. Depending on your predisposition and maybe your assumptions, you could interpret
the
sentence far differently than somebody else would. And often it's the courts and the final say.
What was that?
Sorry about that, folks. I don't know what happened there. That was weird. Okay, go ahead, Rachel. Sorry about that.
No problem. So as I was saying, you know, I think that Republican legislators will walk out and they will make us read all the bills on the floor and their constituents will re-elect them. Do I think that's good policy for anybody? I don't. And honestly, you know, I think we all know how Democrats feel about this. I think we've known how Democrats have felt about this for years. But personally, you know, talking about a very middle of the road bipartisan district where every solution has to be moderate and every solution has to have buy-in from most people, I think one of our priorities, also considering that, you know, we've got a lot on our plate, is good governance and wanting to govern and do a good job and solve problems. And Senate District 16 has a lot of challenges to address. We also have a lot of things that we're building that we're working on that are really cool and really exciting. I think we have a really bright future. It's one of the things that made being a state senator of this district so exciting. And so to be honest, you know, if you are a conservative, if you are a Republican, if you are somebody who believes that we should be spending our tax dollars wisely, one, it's a giant waste of money to have a bunch of legislators who are being paid every day to go to the legislature not show up for the floor, you know, and have 2 months of salaries get paid out for no work to be done. That's a huge waste of taxpayer dollars. Do you want to go to work every day and pay for that? It's up to you. I wouldn't. I certainly would not. The other thing is that, you know, values are one thing, and it's easy to talk about what your values are, but to craft a bill that is good policy, that solves problems, takes time and it takes effort, and it's not as easy as saying, this is my value, and so it is. So when Republicans are wasting time, they also make it incredibly difficult to pass good policies. There are even Republicans who kill their own bills and watch their own bills die so that they can walk out on an issue like abortion. So, you know, I think it's a nuanced issue, right? Republicans have a right to do this. Their districts have a right to support it. Other Oregonians, the majority of Oregonians, have the right to say no. I don't think it's the best tactic that moves us all forward. I think that's why most Oregonians voted in favor of Measure 113.
Thank you. And I just want to give you all the breakdown. Clatsop County and Columbia County passed the bill 50-60%. I don't have the exact numbers, but so Clatsop and Columbia County and Tillamook County voted yes. And as you know, we lean Republican. We're not really purple. We're kind of reddish purple, but not really. And there were only two counties in the entire state who voted no. So the rest of them were just varying degrees. So I do want to point out that this was a very popular bill. So Anthony, you look like you have thoughts on this matter.
Yeah, I do have the numbers in front of me. And I think it's noteworthy that in Senator Weber's district, she represents six counties. She's got a little tiny portion of Yamhill. It's like 28 voters or some such. But in every one of those counties, this measure passed by a really good margin. In every one of these counties, this measure passed by more than Senator Weber won by, which means a significant number of people who voted for her said she should show up, right? In Columbia County, this measure passed by 23 points, and that was the most conservative of the counties she represents. It's pretty overwhelming. I agree with most of what Rachel said just now, but I will say that I think the idea that people need to show up to do the jobs that we elect them for is pretty bipartisan in most of the state, at least. And I think the numbers here in Senator Weber's district really bear that out.
Okay. All right. Carol, what, you're nodding your head. What do you think?
I agree with Anthony and Rachel. But what I feel as just a citizen is that when Weber was running, many of us questioned her about her values on certain things. And one of the things she said, I wasn't, heard her say it, oh, abortion's not going to be an issue. It's just not, it's not important in this session. Then when she walked out, it was because she didn't want to take a vote, make a public vote on something that might imply that she was not, you know, that she was pro-abortion. And she, and they, and the paper said she was sitting in the whatever it is breakout room with the Right to Life person sitting next to her. And I feel like we've been sort of taken advantage of. And I also, I don't want to think of three more years of this. And I just want to correct something that was said on the show previous to this, that there was a very set statement that, oh no, we can't recall our state representatives, but apparently we can. And Oregon is one of the states that has the legislature, it has it in our books, so we may not want to look at this. I mean, what's the plan for 4 years down? Do we just use the office till we can manipulate it so that the point where we get the votes we want and we get the thing that somebody's paying us to do, which is, as we know, happens in this county all the time. So I'm just very concerned about it, and I feel I was let down because I really bought what she said. And I think that's, it's too bad.
Okay, thank you, Carol. So are you advocating for a recall of Senator Weber?
I think I don't want three more years of this, and if her ultimate goal is to get abortion, the, you know, the right wing abortion thing on the Columbia, on the state, yes. I mean, I think people are being paid to do these kind of things, and it, they don't care if it takes 2 or 3 years because it's meeting somebody's absurd criteria.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you. So, what's our answer here? Does anybody, as Rachel has pointed out, it has been part of the toolbox, and the Democrats used it 15 years ago. They walked out as well. And I think it was the House Democrats at the time, whenever this was, 20 years ago when they were in the minority. And it has been utilized, but at the time, I think there was like one walkout, and then that was their protest. But as we know, since 2016, it's been day after day after day. And meanwhile, a lot of good bills have never seen the light of day because there's only so much time. So what do you think, Anthony? Is the answer that the Oregon legislature should become an actual real legislature, a full-time legislature? would that resolve this? I realize that that's a huge lift, but I mean, what are your thoughts?
That's an interesting question. That's sort of, I think, bigger than what we really need for this particular problem right now. I think there are lots of changes we could make that would improve the situation. 113, I think, was a really good improvement. And despite the legal challenges that the Republicans are trying right now, I think we are going to see that make a really positive difference. I know in the past we've done things like try to make the pay for legislators more competitive, and I think that would make it easier for people to treat this as a real job. Right now, legislators are paid very minimal amounts, certainly laughably so when you look at our neighbors to the north or the south. And the result of that is you get people who are, you know, only in certain sort of economic or social situations can afford to go be legislators. And that's really unfortunate for the state. So I'd love to see a bunch of changes to correct that problem. But in terms of the walkouts particularly, I think if we treated this as a full-time job, then that wouldn't really, I don't believe that that would really affect this, because they're not walking out because they have other things they need to be attending to. They're walking out because they don't want to do the job they were sent there for. And that would still be the case if we sent them there for, 50 weeks a year instead of, whatever a given session is.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that perspective. I was just wondering, it's because they know there's a deadline looming. So each session, you have such a small, and for a lot of folks, 5-6 months seems like a lot of time to get a bill passed. But in the reality, in the ways of the legislature, it's such a slow and laborious process that it's rare to have bills really be, the homeless package that was passed this year, and it was bipartisan support, that flew through the legislature because that was what they decided they wanted to do. But most of the time, that is not the case. So they know that there's a deadline looming, and they know that the Democrats, or, in this case, the majority party is the Democrats, have to come back to the table, because if they don't, the budget isn't going to get passed, and people aren't going to get paid. DHS doesn't get their money. Every agency, all the state employees. So they're basically extorting the majority party, my opinion. But anyway, Rachel, what do you think? Do you think that there is a solution? I mean, we thought Measure 113 would be the solution. Maybe it will be.
One, I think that Measure 113 was actually a little indirect. I think we could have just changed the quorum requirements and said, we need a simple majority to get on with our day. That would have been the easiest thing to do. And it would have been an immediate change that would have allowed us to do work this session. I'm sure there were political calculations that, made people choose a different path, I suppose, but I think that would have been the most direct solution. And I think it's important to remember that Republicans do think they're doing their jobs. And if they keep getting reelected for walking out and playing games, then I think it stands to reason that, a majority of their constituents think that they're doing their jobs. And I think that's an important thing to remember. However, if the majority of Oregonians are being held hostage, essentially, and having their time wasted, they have to do what is in their power, which is change the rules, whether it's Measure 113 or, a simple change to the quorum.
Okay. And do you recall offhand what the quorum in the Senate is right now?
I do not.
Okay. We do have a call, a listener call, and the listener called to say that these walkouts are really against the voters. So I'm guessing they're saying that, well, this is really hurting the voters, not the majority party. And overall, it's hurting Oregonians if the legislature can't get its business done. So we're going to take a quick break. And we come back, we're going to be joined by former House Majority Leader Barbara Smith-Warner. She's going to give us her perspective on this Measure 113 mess. So stay with us. This is Setting the Record Straight. We'll be right back.
Need towing? Call Grumpy's Towing, 24-hour emergency service, providing jump starts, winching and recovery for autos, trucks, to boats. And Grumpy's Towing is equipped to service large trucks to semi-trucks. Grumpy's Towing is here to give you prompt service, and they work with most insurance companies. When you need help, remember Grumpy's Towing. That's the name for 24-hour service. Call 503-543-5533. Grumpy's Towing, 503-543-5533. Your St. Helens McDonald's is hiring now. 30 hours per week, all shifts. Apply at mcdonalds.com or call Kim now, Tuesday through Thursday, 1 to 4 p.m. 503-397-6164. 503-397-6164. Your St. Helens McDonald's is a great place to work in a fun environment with our newly remodeled lobby, so come join our team today. Visit mcdonalds.com on the web or call Kim Tuesday through Thursday, 1 to 4 p.m., 503-397-6164. McDonald's is an equal opportunity employer.
This is Realizing Art, your local tattoo and body art studio, serving Lower Columbia County since 2019. We offer a variety of tattoo and art services in a warm, clean, and welcoming environment. Stop by downtown St. Helens and visit Realizing Art. You can give us a call at 503-396-5018, or you can find us on Facebook and Google. Again, that's Realizing Art in downtown St. Helens, Oregon.
Hi, this is Tracy from Highway 30 Barbers reminding you to stop in for a great look 6 days a week. We are located right off Highway 30, just north of Fred Meyer. Open 10 to 6 Monday through Friday and 10 to 4 on Saturday. Enjoy an ice-cold beer and get a great new look. We are the best barber shop in Columbia County, so make all your friends jealous and come on in because there's no appointment necessary at Highway 30 Barbers. Check us out on Facebook. Fill up the punch card and get a free haircut. Wow, that's a great deal from Highway 30 Barbers. Scappoose. Call us today at 503-543-2417.
It's setting the record straight on KOHI with Melinda Bernard. Call the show now at 503-397-1600.
Why don't you just meet me in the middle? And we're back. Carol and I are chatting today about the Republican challenge of Measure 113. We're going to get to that in just a moment, and we have an additional guest to introduce. But before we do that, I wanted to just take a brief moment to remind everyone that there is a GoFundMe and a sort of a support effort for the Haymeyer family. For those of you unaware, a mother and her two young children were killed in the fire along with their dog and their cat, and they left behind a 14-year-old. You can call the Scappoose School District for more information if you would like to help. It's been a rough week for all of us here in Columbia County, so do what you can. And I'm going to switch gears here and welcome House Majority, former House Majority Leader Barbara Smith Warner. She's joining us with former Senator Rachel Armitage and our current chair of the Columbia County Democrats, Anthony Sirasi. Thank you so much. And thanks for joining us, Barbara. And I'd love to hear your take on the Republicans' assertion that 68% of Oregonians just really didn't know what they were talking about when they voted in Measure 113.
Right. Well, great to see you, Melinda. Thanks for having me. Great to see my former colleague, Senator Armitage, Chair Sirasi, Carol. Hi, everybody. I love your show. Longtime listener. But I can't say first time caller because I think I've been on before. Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. If there is a premise upon which democracy depends, it is that of majority rule, right? Period. Like, that is how we all just kind of generally agree that things work, majority rule. And I would say that, A, the whole concept of shutting down the government by folks walking out, really, it's because they believe in minority rule. They do not believe in majority rule. And that, foundationally, that is the problem with the two-thirds quorum rules that we have in the legislature. We are one of only two states, I believe, that still requires a supermajority. Because what it means when you require a supermajority is that a superminority gets to make the rules. And that just saying that out loud, somebody pointed that out to me, and I was like, oh, right. that is really what it means. So, you know, there's always a lot of questions about exactly, you know, specific language. This is something that comes up in ballot measures with some frequency. You know, as a former legislator, I will tell you, putting on my former legislator hat, we would always kind of grumble about, that's the thing about making laws through ballot measures, is it is done by somebody with a good idea, but who is not an experienced legislative counsel. And the point of running things through the legislative system is you have a bunch of lawyer folks and people who write laws and know how specific you have to be and what language you have to use. And when you are dealing with ballot measures, you have what is presented. So I believe that I agree with you, 68% of people knew what they were asking for and said, yeah, if you try to shut down the government. If you don't show up for work, if you do not, you're not going to get paid. And if you do it enough times, you don't get that job anymore.
Okay. Well, thank you. Well, what about changing the quorum rules? Is that going to take a change to our constitution?
It is. And the way you can do it as a referral. The legislature can do it as a referral. That is a way to pass constitutional change. And, you know, the thought was, let's just make it painful, right? Okay, well, there is no rule saying if you do this, you can't keep your job. Well, let's change the rules and make it so that you can't keep your job. And then they just kept doing it. And so I think that, and I mean, frankly, it's kind of obscure. Like the whole idea that, oh, you'd have to refer out a measure and you'd have to explain to people what a quorum is. But boy, if you just talk about the minority being in charge, like minority rules, I really think that is how you're going to get people to understand it. And I think, I very much think that the legislature should refer out a constitutional amendment to change the quorum so that indeed majority rules and a majority is what keeps the government working and running and doing its job.
Thank you. Rachel, you're nodding your head along. What do you think the quorum should be? In the Senate, Barbara had mentioned that it's 20 is right now out of 30. So what do you think the quorum, what would be fair?
Yeah, thank you. Toward the end of our last segment, the good former representative came on and was like, oh, I don't remember. Do you remember? And I know it's 40 out of 60 for the House and 20 out of 30 for the Senate. I personally am okay with 50-50. I'm okay with a simple majority, 50% plus one in any case. I think the representative, and I will never stop calling you that, because when I was when I was in the House as a baby intern, I think you were there. You know, I think it's a really good point that you know, the majority should rule. And I think the fact that this, as I was saying before, the fact that this was a fair, at some point, our legislators had decided that this was okay. And we have every right to decide that this isn't okay anymore. But until we say, no, that's not okay, and pass a Measure 113 or change the rules, you know, it is fair. It's not good, but it is fair. And I think we have to respect, until we decide to act, that that's how Republicans choose to govern.
Okay, thank you. Anthony, do you want to weigh in here?
Yeah, I think, I mean, fair is sort of a big word, in terms of the meaning that goes behind it, right? I think the democratic principles of one person, one vote and equal representation are really the sort of ideal of fair when we're talking about, governance. And in my opinion, these walkouts undercut that because of the reliance on, the current rules of minority. It's certainly legal. And it's certainly within the rules that we have previously defined, but I don't think it's fair to the voters, especially for someone like in our district, where Senator Weber's own voters overwhelmingly approved this change. I think that's a particularly glaring example of where she is just willfully flouting the will of her own voters.
Mm-hmm. Barbara, what would be a good quorum, do you think, in the House and the Senate?
I mean, I think a simple majority is not unreasonable. You know, let's remind ourselves of something. We are living in a time that is dominated by a whole range of varieties of the big lie, right? I'm working now, and I'm happy to come and talk to you about this at some other time, about expanding vote by mail, vote at home, as we call it, to other states, right? It's a great democracy thing. And one of the things that I am having to learn about and have my mind blown by almost on a daily basis is there is a pretty obscure organization called ERIC, the Election Registration Information Center. ERIC was established by a whole bunch of states probably 10, 15 years ago, and the idea was, we have a country where every state runs its own election. So it's really hard for us to keep track of who's voting where. You move to a place, you register in a new place. Maybe you forget to unregister in the old place. Maybe you're nefarious and try to vote in both of those places. How about if we set up a really good, very complicated, but really good system to make sure that nobody is registered in more than one state? Eric comes together, many years of work. Oregon's own John Lindback, one of our former elections director, was the founding executive director of this organization. Its entire purpose is to keep people from being able to vote in more than one state, to combat election fraud. And so what we have watched happen in the last year is a number of states run by Republicans withdrawing from Eric because they say that they want to combat election fraud by withdrawing from Eric. It is literally, they say the thing that is opposite of what is actually happening. There is no other way to keep somebody from being registered in more than one state than to have both of those states be in Eric. And yet, state after state, it's not a complete tidal wave, but it is, but no one in the media, they say, oh, this belief, this whatever, this lie. There is lie after lie that this, they're withdrawing because they are lying and saying that they want to combat fraud, but they are actually withdrawing from the thing that combats fraud. So, this is the world in which we live, where people, it's like up is down, yes is no, where we are, you know, where the Republican Party is about to nominate the same lying narcissist that they have already done twice before, right? Despite clear federal crimes, all sorts of things. Sorry, I'm not going to go too far into this. But this is the world in which we're living. So for a couple hundred years, 150 years, we've been able to have a quorum because people have been rational and believed in doing their job as an elected. And now we are in a situation, unfortunately, where that does not seem to be the thing anymore. In an ideal world, yeah, I guess we could still have a two-thirds quorum in order to do the business for which we are elected and for which the taxpayers pay our salaries, small as they may be. But if you are going to have a whole chunk of the conversation with people who, you know, who say the opposite of what is true, we need to at least hold on to the baseline of one person, one vote, and majority rules.
Thank you. Thank you. Eloquently stated. You know, Carol, you made a really good point earlier on that specifically pertaining to Senator Weber, that she is very focused on one issue, and that issue is abortion, and that she has plenty of time left in her, before she has to run again, left in her term, to just keep doing that, just to keep throwing bill after bill, you know, under the bus, so to speak, to keep Oregon from codifying strong abortion laws. And so I'd like to know, like, what do you think? Do you think that there's a danger, a real danger, of other Republicans doing the same thing?
Yeah, absolutely. And as somebody who's worked on campaign finance issues in this state for years, we see that other interests, for whoever, you know, companies, whatever, who decide they want something, just come in and pay politicians a certain amount to do what they want. And she's already made statements, according to the show before yours, ours, she wasn't on the show, but somebody quoted her saying she has 3 years left to get the abortion issue settled. And yet she told us people, us voters, that it was not going to be an issue. And so it was okay to go ahead and vote for her. And it's not just that. It's, I represent a group that has a big interest in a couple of grants that were going to come through that didn't, because everybody was playing these games. And it's very frustrating to us citizens who are paying our taxes, going to work every day, and feeling like if we don't have enough money, our will is not really carried through at all.
Thank you. And, well, let's talk about that. Barbara, do you have any estimation how many bills die each year during the walkouts?
Yeah.
I know that there's an incredible amount of staff time and not just the staff who work for the legislatures, but the lawyers and the legislative research office and the finance office, all of that goes into crafting one bill, right? So how much money, how many bills are we talking?
Yeah, that's a great question. I am not, I'm not sure I can give you a number, but what I know is that for every session, you can find a number of stories like Carol's about grants that got lost, because it is a large administrative process to get through that. Like every chunk of time that you cannot have, because it is a process. We do review all the language and you have to connect it with the budget and all of that. So while I can't give you a number, I can tell you that it has a significant impact, not just on the big ones that you hear about, right? And the continued, okay, this isn't going to happen because of that. But on any number, we had, and I'm not going to give super specifics, but I remember in the 2019 session, there was a pretty important bill about adjusting the state school fund to be able to continue to give full funding to a couple of districts whose schools had burned down, and so their numbers were way off, but they still needed, and we had to pass something, and that was something that got lost in the confusion of the pushback, you know, from the shutting down the government, and that got lost, and it was put a year behind because it got lost in the shuffle, because there's so many things going on and so many moving parts that is what makes it really challenging. And it really is. It's the whole concept that I don't, you know, I get elected to do a job, but I choose not to do it. I choose to shut down the government. I choose for my minority voice and belief to overpower the will and the stated desire of the majority.
Thank you. But the interesting thing is that this pushback usually seems to be about social issues. They came together in terms of giving the state, what was it, $100 million in funding for housing and homelessness and shelters and all of that. So they came together on that, which is just mind-blowing. But then when it comes to other issues that we would consider social issues, they're putting on the brakes, but all of the important, the unsexy things get lost in the shuffle.
Right.
So, now, Rachel, you worked in the Senate, and I'd love to know, I mean, you can create bills with very reasonable people until you're talking about a social issue, right? I mean, how do you put all that together? How do you deal with a colleague like that?
Yeah, I mean, I just think this whole situation is so sad. You know, we have two different parties. The two different parties aren't going to agree on everything. There has been good faith in the past. That's why the supermajority rule was allowed to exist for so long, because in good faith, everybody showed up to negotiate, participate, and listen, even when somebody didn't agree with them. That's not happening anymore, and I just think that's really sad. You know, in this district in particular, like I said before, we have a lot of issues to work on, and I know that Senator Weber, she and I don't agree on everything, but I know she does care about certain political issues. She does see the district, and so for her to be taking a stance on abortion, which is something that, you know, it's not just that the majority of Oregonians are pro-choice. It's that this district has a legacy of being pro-choice. This is an independent district. And so the fact that she would stand against this district on that issue, and forego all of these other things that we really need to be working on, it is really sad. It is really upsetting. One other thing I will say is that when I was in the legislature for that brief period of time, we did give rural legislators $100 million for infrastructure projects and said, here's this funding, you decide where it goes. I think that was something that was really positive. I would love to see the legislature doing more things like that.
Thank you. Anthony, you walk this district. You talk to hundreds and hundreds, 1,000 people when you ran for office. And what was did you hear that there was an overarching message between the right and the left, or did you feel like people wanted to come together and work together?
Oh, I mean, the issues that are affecting people that I talked to were overwhelmingly bipartisan. Everybody has concerns about housing costs. That was sort of the number one thing I heard going door to door. Healthcare availability is another big one that, like, you know, it doesn't matter what party you are, you need a place to live, right? And there are things that the legislature could be doing to help improve a lot of these problems. And they don't get done when people don't do the work. The example that always kills me is wildfire prevention. Not this most recent session, but a previous session, we had bills that died on the floor because of a walkout to address wildfire prevention. And, like, you know, as we're all aware, that continues to be a problem in Oregon. It's hard to look at specific wildfires and specific mitigation efforts and whatever, but it's almost certainly true that people lost their homes because of these walkouts, right? That fact is, it just feels criminal to me. Like, that should not be something that legislatures are willing to be like, you know, I'm going to take my ball and go home. Good luck with your wildfire.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And I just want to say, Barseth Warner had to hop off our call, and I just want to say thank you so much for her, for taking the time to talk with us this morning. And she definitely will be back on a later show to talk about the Vote at Home program. But continuing on our conversation, I thought it was really interesting for those people who were at FAIR this year. I worked in the Democrat booth along with Carol, and I had many Republicans, people I didn't know, who approached the booth and said, we just want to work together. And they I don't think they were super active in their party. They just were just regular people who identified themselves as Republicans and conservative, but really felt like they wanted us all to work together. And so my response, and I don't know what your response, Carol, was that we were happy to do that. We're already doing that. When you work on, like, just what we were just talking earlier about the Haymeyer family, now no one's going to say, well, are you Republican, Independent, or Democrat? We're going to come together as a community because that's what Columbia County does the best. And we have a project, or whatever it is, whether it's Life Empowered or whether it's Halloween Town or whatever. People come together because we want to support our community. We want to better our community. And I'm just wondering, you know, if that was some of the messages that you heard when you were, you know, together. Because locally, what we want is really different than what is being represented, at, you know, at the higher level. And so, Carol, did you have also hear that message at FAIR?
I did. And when we interviewed Brad Witt on the radio there at the FAIR, he was saying he could see the difference between the booths. You know, one was fight this, fight that, sign up against this, get school charged. And whereas we were welcoming, give your kid a piece of candy and let's talk. And we had several people who said, I kind of wanted to become a Democrat, but I didn't know how. I love that. I love that people are sort of seeing this. And I agree with you. We're in a wonderful small town environment, and we need to work together. And I really resent the large corporations and the large social issue groups that are paying, and all you have to do is go on to the state records of what, I can't remember the name of it now, but Orstar. No, yeah. And see what people get and how much money they have. And it's terrifying. And so I agree. I think it's our better thing to do is to be a welcoming, caring, and get down to what can we do together that'll make it better. And we can do that. And that's why I don't like the short term. I'm going to give up 3 years of the legislature so that I can get the big thing settled, which was mandated from a presidential level 4 years ago.
Right. Rachel, what do you think? What are some of the messages you've heard?
I think that all over this district, I've heard people wanting their representation to work across the aisle and come up with reasonable, measured, you know, middle of the road solutions. That's who this district is. And I think that people voted for Senator Weber because they believed that she was that person. I think the way that, you know, if I had been in the opposing party, you know, just to be clear, I am a Democrat. You know, I am a pro-choice Democrat. But if I had been a Republican, you know, I don't think I would have walked out. I think I would have said, you know, these are the specific issues, because ultimately Republicans really did have specific issues and they didn't give voice to those things either. Not only did they let all these other bills die, but they really weren't, you know, it was a we don't like abortion, we're walking out. It wasn't any sort of attempt to make the actual bill better or more effective. And I think that's really sad. I think that's another way that this policy wastes time. But I would agree. You know, I believe in the power of the voters. The voters make the rules. If the rules are a certain way, you know, people have the right to use those rules to their advantage. And if the majority of voters don't like that, the majority of the voters should use their power to change those rules. Now, to that end, one thing we have not discussed is, or discussed a lot, is that I do also very much believe that voters knew exactly what they were doing when they passed Measure 113. I think the Secretary of State made the absolute right call. I don't think Republicans are going to be successful in court. I think the courts are going to rule with the Secretary of State. And I think that ultimately, you know, Republicans and the voters in their districts are going to lose, you know, a lot of former county commissioners, mayors, and people that we may not agree with, but nevertheless do have expertise. And we're going to have a whole new set of legislators starting from scratch. And I think that's unfortunate. It's really sad. So.
Right. Thank you. That's a great point. And I, you know, I want to go to back to what you said earlier, Carol, about finance. I'm wondering, you know, how many Republicans did want to walk out, and how many of them were basically because of the when you're a minority party, the funding arm of your party holds a lot of sway because they have paid for your campaign. And whether or not you wanted to walk out and you wanted to leave your bills on the table, you're almost forced to, because if you don't play, they're not going to pay. So I just wondered how many of them really thought, oh, maybe this isn't a good idea, but I have no other choice. Some of them, they were just a little bit strategic about it, because some of them were, you know, knew that they had so many absences and then they stopped. They didn't go up to the 10. So, but they still, somebody did the math and they somehow kept a quorum from happening. But then there were some who either they're not going to return, or they thought, well, I'm safe. I'm just, you know, I'm going to do it. So I thought that was sort of an interesting thought too. But, anyway, it's definitely something we're going to be watching. And it'll, like you said, Rachel, I do agree. I do think that voters knew exactly what they were doing and what the intent was, even if the wording, according to Republicans. What do you think, Anthony? One last thought. We have about a minute left. Do you think
Republicans? I think the wording was pretty clear. I think their argument basically hinges on they want to argue that there was a comma missing to make something a dependent clause. I think that the voters' pamphlets were really clear. The voters' intent was really clear. The legal framework that the courts have used to resolve these questions goes back to, like, 1993. None of this is new. They're grasping at straws, trying to, again, ignore the will of the people.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you both. That's it. That's all we have for today. And I just want to thank you again, Rachel Armitage and Anthony Rossi and Barbara Smith Warner for joining us to talk about this topic. And Carol and I will be back next week with a brand new show. So make it a great week. This has been Setting the Record Straight.
Why don't you just meet me in the middle? I'm losing my mind just a little.
You've been listening to Setting the Record Straight with Melinda Bernard on KOHI. Listen again next Friday here on AM 1600. You can email the show, kohi.radio@gmail.com, or email Melinda, strsradio@gmail.com.
Oh, take a step.